news and more, including state-by-state reports on the nation's premier youth organization. This is FFA Today on Rural Radio 147.
Hello and welcome to this week's FFA Today. I'm your host, Janet Atkinson. And just earlier this week, Puerto Rico breathed a sigh of relief after Hurricane Dorian, then on its way to a Category 5 status, grazed the nation but avoided the devastating landfall of past storms. Storms like 2017's Hurricane Maria, which tore across the island nation, causing catastrophic damage and numerous fatalities. No electricity, no water, also demolished houses, steep mountain roads made impassable by mud and vegetation, limited medical supplies at the hospitals, rations at the grocery store, to ensure there was enough food to go around. Well, believe it or not, it's already been 2 years since what was regarded as the worst natural disaster on record in Puerto Rico. But finally, thanks in part to the help of local FFA members, they are making some progress again.
Suddenly, it was like an earthquake we felt. It was the giant amount of water, mud, and lumbers and trees. They would carry on, even enormous rocks, just like a, looks like an avalanche. Many things you try to build up with your family, and then you see that everything is just coming down in just a few hours. We felt devastated.
My mom was in the living room, so I went to the living room where my mom was. And I saw my mom crying, and I asked my dad, "Dad, why is mom crying?" So he told me we lost the house. My sister and I cried.
Basically, the access to our community was completely closed. We were worried. We were kind of scared.
My house was destroyed. The roof fell off, and I couldn't go back to my old house, so I got a new one, and now I'm living there with my brother and my mom.
Our school suffered serious damages. We couldn't be a normal class for almost 2 months. The students, they realized that the farm was completely destroyed, the tool shed, the greenhouse, the crops, were many of them were gone. Basically, we saw like almost four feet of mud and water just coming down in just a few hours.
I helped clean up. We cleaned up the trees and the leaves. We walked around the whole farm. It was cleaned. It was picked up.
After the hurricane, there was a lot to clean up. So I helped my family clean the roads because there was a lot of branches and mud.
My dad first went into the house, and then my grandfather. And they cleaned the house little by little. And my dad and my mom and my sister and I, with one of my dad's friends, we began to help the communities in need.
The students say, okay, let's be back in our feet again. They realized there was something we had to do, and they took the tools, and they always remember that when we say, okay, your notebook is gonna be the land, your pencil is gonna be the tool that you had in your hand, and the words are gonna be the crops that you're gonna harvest, the seeds. They realized that message, and they got it. I'm very proud every day of being FFA. Every FFA chapter around the island, especially my students, former FFA officers, they just open their hearts.
In the FFA, I learned that we have to serve because we're all like a family and family helps each other.
I've seen a lot of towns unifying to help each other out, and that's very important because Puerto Rico needs to move forward, and that's the way to do it.
And Puerto Rico is home to 2,650 FFA members and 150 chapters. Well, don't go anywhere. This year, FFA celebrates a major milestone. Hear what it is and learn about the people that made it possible. Straight ahead on FFA Today. Welcome back to the show. And 2019 marks a major anniversary in the history of the National FFA. It was 50 years ago this year that the landmark vote was taken, allowing the full female membership in the organization. And now, 5 decades later, women are an integral part, an indispensable part of FFA, from the local level all the way to the national officer team, half of which is female. Now we hear about where that journey first began and the long path it took to where we are today.
Women have always played a vital role in agricultural life. We work shoulder to shoulder and hand in hand with our fathers and brothers, our husbands and sons, and our friends and colleagues to plant and harvest crops, tend livestock, and make some of the greatest agricultural advancements of our time. But it wasn't until 1969 that women were officially and finally granted membership in the National FFA organization. 50 years later, the story of the long and important effort to allow women in FFA is worth telling. It's also the perfect time to celebrate the wonderful and numerous accomplishments of female FFA members to demonstrate the importance of equity and inclusion of all.
There are also women who are early believers in agricultural education. Among them, and one of the most notable, was Charlotte Ware.
When she got married in 1895, she was given a Jersey heifer for a marriage gift, and she developed a Jersey herd. And in 1909, she started a school in Massachusetts to train women to be dairy farmers. And then later on, she became very active in promoting high school agricultural education and was primarily responsible for establishing the Norfolk Agricultural School there in Massachusetts. So women have been involved since the get-go in agriculture. Then the question is how about FFA and agricultural education?
Rufus Stimson, who introduced the revolutionary idea of experiential learning outside of the classroom, was an early proponent of women in agricultural education.
And as I researched Rufus Stimson, I found that he was an advocate for having females in agriculture back in the early 1900s. Whenever you do historical research, one item leads to another item, which leads to another item.
The Smith-Hughes Act of 1917 provided federal funds to teach agriculture. While there weren't a lot of young women in agriculture classes at the time, there were some. And nowhere was it more evident than in Massachusetts.
The state supervisor of agriculture in Massachusetts in 1922 said, "Year after year, girls have demonstrated they can profit from our vocational agricultural education. Under such circumstances, we must, of course, agree that there can be no discrimination as to sex and our entrance privileges."
Future Farmers of America was established in 1928. The first national FFA convention was held in Kansas City, Missouri, with 33 delegates from 18 states in attendance. Leslie Applegate from New Jersey was elected the first national FFA president.
What most people don't realize is in the original constitution of the FFA, it said membership is open to students. It did not say male, it did not say female, it's for students. So that was a mistake, I guess, because in 1930, the FFA constitution was changed to say it was for males. And then all heck broke out in 1933. The Essex chapter of the Future Farmers of America in Massachusetts competed in the national chapter contest. They sent in a roster of their members, and the FFA discovered five girls on the roster. They went ballistic. The national president wrote a letter to Massachusetts saying, "You got to fix the problem." So what did Massachusetts do? Well, they said, "We don't have a problem. You have the problem."
It turns out, the Massachusetts Constitution was modeled after the original FFA Constitution, which did not discriminate against women. When the national organization changed the wording to male students in 1930, Massachusetts didn't follow suit. Over several years, Massachusetts, along with a few other eastern states, battled national FFA over the issue. Eventually, an amendment passed that directed FFA to get a ruling from the Massachusetts Attorney General.
The state director of vocational education said, "That is crazy. You will look like an idiot." There's been court cases in Massachusetts. There's policy, there's law. It has been proven time and time again in Massachusetts that females cannot be discriminated against. So in 1937, there was a constitutional amendment to the FFA. And the constitutional amendment said, in states where there is laws prohibiting discrimination, females can be members of the FFA at the state level. They cannot participate at the national level. And then things were very quiet for a long, long time, until the 60s.
The 1960s was a tumultuous period of cultural conflict and change in the United States. Agricultural education and FFA were not immune to the changes and tension that gripped the country. First, Congress passed the Agricultural Education Act of 1963.
This act was the first major vocational legislation since the Smith-Hughes Act. The Smith-Hughes Act said the purpose of agricultural education was to prepare farmers. The 1963 Act said the purpose of agricultural education is to prepare agriculturalists. And this could be people in horticulture, forestry, agricultural business, ag mechanics. So the scope of what was taught in agriculture was greatly broadened. And there was a guy at Ohio State named Earl Kantner who did a study for his doctoral dissertation on how does FFA need to change. And he sent out a survey to a whole group of people, over 300 people, but then he asked a question, should we allow girls, females, in the FFA? His question said girls. So here is the interesting results. The school principals that he surveyed said definitely we should allow women in FFA. The university professors of agriculture said definitely we should have females in the FFA. So there were three other groups. What did they say? The ag teachers, they weren't so wild about it. The state supervisors, they weren't so wild about it. And the FFA executive secretaries in each state were not wild about it.
1 year later, Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Which banned discrimination against any individual because of his race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. The FFA policy of excluding women from national participation was now at odds with federal law.
It's not like in the 30s where Rufus Stimson was the avowed leader to let females in the FFA. In the 60s, it was a guy named William Metzger. He was the head lawyer for the Department of Education, general counsel. And he's the one that told the FFA, you must allow females in the FFA. You're violating federal law. And this was a real challenge because in order to do that, you had to change the Constitution. And it took a two-thirds vote. And who were the people voting on the change? Boys. The National FFA said, do we need to change, but how do you convince the FFA members who are all male to vote to allow females? And it came up for vote several times, and each time it was voted down. And finally, the FFA board of directors, they didn't know what to do.
By the late 1960s, several state attorney generals had ruled against FFA in their states, resulting in many states allowing women in FFA under the state law provision of the Constitution. But women were still banned from national participation.
In 68, it came up for a vote again, and it failed by 7 votes. And then it was brought up again in 69, and it passed by 2 votes. And females were finally allowed membership in the FFA at the national level.
Since 1969, female members have contributed in countless ways throughout FFA. From the first female delegates, Anita Decker and Patricia Krawicki in 1970, to Julie Smiley, elected in 1976 as the first female national officer. From Jan Eberle, the organization's first female national president, to Brianna Holbert, the first African-American female elected as national FFA president in 2017. In 2019, women make up 45% of FFA membership.
And we'll continue to mark this significant anniversary throughout the year right here on Rural Radio. And stay tuned. We're off to the Peach State coming up next. thanks for tuning in this week. And finally, we head to Georgia. That's where WDIG-TV 35 catches up with the West Lawrence FFA, a middle school chapter only in their second year, and they're already making a name for themselves statewide.
Hi, I'm Duana Cooper, and I'm here with Hope Carter. And she is the middle school sponsor of the FFA at West Lawrence Middle School. And we're here to talk to her today a little bit about the chapter, how it got started at the middle school, and some of the things that have happened this year.
And so this is our second year. West Lawrence Middle School FFA was brand new last year. The school system was fortunate enough that they were able to begin that program at the middle school last year. So this is my second year, and I'm really excited about what the students are doing and what they're learning through agricultural education and the FFA at the middle school.
But this is not your first rodeo when it comes to FFA. You were employed at the state level. So talk to us a little bit about what you did previously with the FFA organization.
Yeah, so I've been around FFA my whole life. My grandfather and my father were both agricultural education teachers before they became administrators. And then I got involved in FFA when I was in the seventh grade. When I graduated from college, I worked as the leadership program specialist for Georgia FFA. I planned leadership programs and helped manage state and area officer programs through Georgia FFA Association and served the more than 42,000 Georgia FFA members here in our state. I did that for 7 years, and then my husband and I decided to move back closer to home, and so we did that a couple of years ago. I taught at Northwest for 2 years, and then when they opened the program, I was fortunate enough to receive that job at the middle school. So it's been a long time, but I love FFA and I'm very passionate about it.
I really think that they were the fortunate ones to receive you in the FFA program at the middle school, because just from being close to the program this year, I know that you really are dedicated to the program. You really are knowledgeable about the program, and the people who are involved in the program really love you a lot.
Thank
as
you so
their
much.
Sponsor.
I appreciate that. A lot of times what we try to do is make sure people know. You know, they think about agriculture and they immediately associate that with farming, which is the backbone of our organization. But FFA is not just about farming. It's so much more than that. And what people don't realize is that they use agriculture every day. Every time that you eat, every time you put on your clothes, every time you go home to a roof over your house, all of those things come from agriculture. And so our students have opportunities related to that. We have career development events, which are competitions for students to be involved in. There are team and individual competitions. There are awards students can apply for through their supervised agricultural experience programs, which are projects that the students do outside of class related to agriculture. And then there's also leadership opportunities at leadership conferences, conventions, summer camps. There's so many things that students can be a part of and learn new knowledge, gain new experiences, and make new friends and meet people from all over the state. So it truly is a great program to be involved in.
Absolutely, absolutely. I know that they really love the summer camp. And it really has evolved. A lot of times the original idea of an FFA person was a young man with boots on and literally just tilling the fields and producing, you know, agricultural products. But like you mentioned, the floriculture, you know, children that are interested in veterinary science and veterinary, you know, degrees,
right.
Forestry, timber, really just a broad, broad program, much more so than I think that most people are aware of.
Yeah. You know, FFA changed its name, too. We were founded as Future Farmers of America, but in 1988, we changed the name to the National FFA Organization to try to change the perception that we were just about farming, that we're more about all these other opportunities in addition to farming.
You had some outstanding students this year. For a first-year chapter, you had some students that went really far at the state and national level. One of the students that comes to mind is Casey Butler. Can you tell us a little bit about what she did, what her project was, and some of the accolade that she received this year?
Yeah, so one of the opportunities that students have through being in agricultural education is to do a supervised agricultural experience project where they do work in agriculture outside of regular class time. And Casey's family owns a large farm here in Lawrence County. They grow several different crops, and she helps her family out on the farm during the summer, on the weekends, and then some days after school when she's not working. And so she kept track of all the time that she spent out on her family's farm, of the skills that she was learning, like running the irrigation system, checking her cattle herd's health and managing that, running over, driving the tractor, just all these different skills that she learned. And she submitted what we call a middle school record book. Those are specifically for students in middle school to apply to gain recognition for their supervised agricultural experiences. And so you apply on the area level first. We put together her application. It's almost 20 pages long. It's a large application where you have to have proof and pictures that they're doing these projects. Talk about the skills. It's a lot of writing in that application as well. Talk about if she's earned any money and what type of materials that she's using. And so we sent our application off to the area level, which would kind of be like region level if you're dealing with sports.
Sure.
And so she won the area level, and then her application as the winner of the area level was submitted to state. And those applications are judged, and she was named the state winner back in April. So I'm really proud of her.
As you should be. That's really excellent. So you had another team that won at the state level as well, and their event is called Conduct of Chapter. Can you tell us a little bit about Conduct of Chapter? Because it's something that really is out of the norm of what people think about for FFA. And just explain to us a little bit about what this event is, what it takes to compete in it, what happens with this particular event.
Absolutely. So Conduct of Chapter Meetings is a leadership event for students. It's based on parliamentary procedure, specifically on Robert's Rules of Order, which is a big, thick book that is very hard to understand. So we try to make it manageable for these students. But they learn the rules of parliamentary procedure, the motions that go along with it, whether those motions require a second, are debatable, amendable, what vote they require. And they have to do a presentation that is correct based on parliamentary law. So they have to study that and know those rules. They take a written test that has 25 questions, and then they do that presentation. And basically, they walk into a room, and there are cards laid out for those students. And as soon as they get there, they flip over that card where there is a main motion, something like, I move that our chapter sponsor a family for the holidays, or I move that our chapter host a blood drive, something that the school could do as a part of FFA. And they get 1 minute to look over that main motion. And then there are four additional abilities that they have to complete to do parliamentary procedure correctly. It may be amend, it may be division of the assembly, it could be commit or refer. There are several different abilities they have to perform, and we don't know what those are. We learn 13 different motions. We never know the four that are on that card until we get there. And there are 7 members on that team, and we don't know which members get those motions until they flip over that card. So they do that presentation. In addition to parliamentary law, they have to also demonstrate correct opening and closing FFA opening ceremony. And then they also, after their presentation, each have to answer an oral question based on parliamentary law.
That's excellent. As a first-year team, was really incredible, right?
Yeah, it's incredible, too, because they're middle schoolers. Most of the other schools out there we were competing against were high schoolers. Middle schoolers actually only have the opportunity to compete in 3 national events, and these girls got to be a part of one of them. So it's an amazing opportunity.
Thank you so much. That's really excellent.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show, but if you have something that you'd like to share on the program or an idea for something that you'd like to hear more about, let us know. You can shoot us an email at FFAtoday@FFA.org or give us a call, 855-RR on 147. That's 855-776-6147. Until next week, I'm Janet Atkinson with FFA Today on Rural Radio 147, Sirius XM.